morning. May it please the court.
Good morning.
We wait till people get a chance to sit down, Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith.
Your Honor, I'm here based on the ruling by Judge Lindberg in January of 2012, where he granted the summary judgment for the defendants. Basically, I'm representing an Asian Chinese person who was working from this company, who had started working in July of 1999. He had worked there performing to the satisfaction of the employer throughout that time. However, in 2002, he did seek a promotion, and that promotion was denied. Again, in 2005, while still meeting the minimum satisfaction of the employer, he wound up filing a complaint for discrimination with his HR department.
But did he complain specifically of natural origin or race discrimination?
I think it was, Your Honor, to address it, it was a general discrimination that he felt discriminated. I don't believe he used the words race or national origin. This complaint, by the way, was filed pro se, and I didn't come into it until pretty much the end of the case. The court did grant an extension for a couple months for me to do additional discovery. So after that, my client was working as a desktop engineer. While working at the desktop engineer, he was working under Michael Gibbs. In March of 2007, there was a unilateral decision to take my client from the desktop and put him into an exchange engineer into another department. Therein begun the issues that brings us before the court. The issues of him working as an exchange engineer was a problem for my client because he never had been trained. His job description had always been a desktop engineer. Now, as a desktop engineer, he wasn't required to have a pager. He wasn't required to work on the weekends. However, when there was that unilateral decision that moved him into the exchange engineer program, it now became part of his job description that he had to carry this pager and beeper and also work on the weekends. The issue became that it was impossible for him to work on the weekends at home because he had a family. And based on that, it made it more difficult for my client to potentially go with the performance issues that would be required to work out of the house.
But it was a requirement of the job.
It wasn't a requirement, Your Honor, at the beginning, because he was in a different position. He was in a different location. He was in a desktop engineer. It became a requirement once they transferred him, but there was no discussions with him that this was potentially a promotion. They theoretically had closed his position off where they could have laid him off and he could have gone elsewhere. He did complain that it was impossible for him to do this.
But what complaint ever talked about his origin, his national origin, his race, or any other Title VII prohibited activity? What was ever said to him?
Well, the issue was that from his perspective, first, he did report in 2005 that there was issues. There was also an employee, Rosenthal, that had worked in the desktop, and when he was terminated from the position, all the duties from Rosenthal went to my client beside his own duties, and that there was another woman, non-Chinese, that had less of a workload than my client. So, and she, being non-Chinese, he started creating the concept in his mind that he was being treated differently.
Well, but see, I fear it is in his mind because I don't see anything outside of his mind.
Well, the issue becomes one of what's in his mind, but also the puzzle as it comes together, showing the different treatment that in 2002 he didn't have a promotion. In 2005, he files a discrimination issue. In 2007, he goes and he's transferred into a different unit that he's not trained for. Then he starts having some personnel issues where they start talking about his performance in March of 2007, wherein his boss, Mr. Gibbs, indicates, "You pissed me off." Then, a few months later, after being in this, then comes the job assignment that he has to work from home. And once they found that this was a condition that he couldn't abide by, that condition became the nucleus for termination.
But I have to say that Title VII doesn't protect employees who find their work assignments inconvenient.
Well, I think they would protect a person if he's being treated differently than someone else. I mean, basically, he is a protected class. There certainly was the adverse employment. Up until that time that he was terminated, he had been performing to the satisfaction of the employer. Keep in mind that once he said, "I can't work," and he gave a legitimate reason, they wouldn't accept it, rather than maybe put him on a performance improvement plan or perform some kind of suspension or take some kind of action. They took the most grave action possible and terminated. It just would look at those facts that there seemed to also be retaliation from with the concept that he was told by his supervisor, Michael Gibbs, in March of 2007, "Hey, you pissed me off," and then soon after that, he's got this job requirement that he can't meet. I reserve the rest of my time.
Certainly, Mr. Smith. Mr. Lyle.
Thank you. May it please the Court. We are here today to urge the affirmance of Judge Lindbergh's decision below, of course. I think that we just heard the two principal reasons that we're here. One, this all comes from a problem stemming from what's in plaintiff's mind, what his concept of discrimination was. And the second thing that we heard was that the counsel says a Title VII violation would only be triggered if the plaintiff were treated different than someone else. And, of course, that's absent here. Judge Lindbergh, as you know, took this case and decided it on the basis that the plaintiff hadn't established a prima facie case. And we think that's sustainable and is supported by the record. We also think that in the event that it's necessary, that the decision below could be affirmed if the court were to go all the way on both what is the remaining relevant claims, retaliation and discrimination. To start at the back and work our way forward, with respect to the termination decision, and if we were just to focus on pretext, the key elements here that aren't in dispute is that once the plaintiff was in this unit, everyone was required to abide by this rule. There was uniform application of the rule. Others covered for the plaintiff. The plaintiff was made aware of the rule. Of course, there was such a rule, and it's undisputed that the plaintiff didn't abide by the rule. Nothing in the record would leave any reasonable trier of fact to believe that the employer's asserted reason was a lie, was phony, was made up to cover up some sort of discrimination. So relative to pretext, I think that if the court needs to get that far, the court can do it on this record as it exists now. The same would be true with respect to the retaliation claim. There is no evidence here from which a reasonable trier of fact could conclude that there was a causal connection between whatever occurred in 05 and whatever occurred in 07. If we were for a moment to suspend judgment and call that protected activity, there's no causal connection between whatever happened then and the termination. To start, the events are just too remote. And, of course, they ignore the intervening conduct of the plaintiff himself. With respect to the prima facie case, Your Honors, I think as Judge Rovner's questions illustrate, there was no protected activity with respect to the retaliation claim. At most, the plaintiff complained of favoritism, which his brief mischaracterizes as a complaint about a pattern of discrimination. The record's clear that what the plaintiff in his deposition testified that he was complaining about what he thought was favoritism. The 07 complaint was, if anything, was simply that the plaintiff was upset that his boss had said that he was pissed off at him. Again, that doesn't rise to the level of protected activity. There are no comparables. There's no question that the plaintiff was not meeting what is unquestionably a reasonable expectation for an employer. And for all of those reasons, I don't believe I need to continue with the argument and respectfully request that the court affirm Judge Lindberg. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lapp. Anything further, Mr. Smith?
I may. I think I would like to address the favoritism issue because it is a point that I think is important. The favoritism that he talked about was going to Maria Tesi, T-S-E-S-I-S. And the reason for that is she was also on the desktop team, and she's non-Chinese. He had a heavier workload than she did, and he articulated that. Also, when they transferred from the desktop team, my client had more seniority than this person, Maria Tesi. However, she was a good friend of one of the other team leaders, Wethi, W-E-L-T-I. And that favoritism can be discriminatory. So you can favor giving a job to somebody, but if it's done for the wrong reason, like against seniority, or it's also based on race or national origin, that's wrong. Now, the reasonable expectations, again, I did cover in that I believe that there is a reasonable expectation when you first come to a job. When you come into a job, you're given an idea of what you're going to perform. You're given potentially a job discrimination. You then start working in your job, and all of a sudden you have an expectation. Every day you're going to get up, and this is going to be what I'm going to go to. However, when you go to a job, and there's a unilateral decision, hey, we're taking you out of this job, but hey, I've been here for 8 years, I've been the go-to guy, and there's the other person that should go before me, and they don't care. And then they go into a position, and shortly thereafter, after all these years, we now have a person that is being terminated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.